Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Glass seems solid and unchanging unless you break it, but it's not. It's a super cool liquid that changes shape over time, which is why very old windows will be thicker at the bottom of the pane than at the top. The contradictions of glass, that it can facilitate or hinder seeing, that it can change from molten to brittle in a few seconds, that it's both fragile and elastic, are all reasons why Wisconsin artist Beth Lippman works with it. Lippman's best-known sculptural work is made of layers upon layers of glass, some clear, some opaque, some in recognizable shapes, some not. Her pieces have been acquired by museums around the country, including the Brooklyn Museum of Art, the Milwaukee Art Museum, and the Smithsonian. She's currently based in Sheboygan Falls and will be teaching a glass and kiln workshop this weekend at the John Michael Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan. She stopped by the Lake Effect studio and explained to Bonnie North that it is the elusive beauty of glass that draws artists to work with it.
It's so ephemeral. Even though you can touch it, it's tangible. It's really intangible also. I think it somehow has, I know this sounds a little hokey, but like a soul essence to it. There really is this purity to the material, even if it has color in it or dirt. There's still something about it that is almost otherworldly, in my opinion. But then, of course, we use it in all of these different ways. We use it in industry a lot. We use it for our own personal use, our looking glasses, for instance, our eyeglasses, magnifying lens, car window, you know, everything.
It can help us see and
everything.
Also obfuscate seeing,
yeah,
which is so interesting.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't have, or it can not have edges.
Oh,
You know, it sort of disappears.
Oh, it can get very – it's very soft and supple, at least visually. And actually, when you work it hot, which I do often, it is literally an incredibly soft material. It can go from, you know, the viscosity of honey to something that is quite hard and firm within, like, seconds. So it's really essentially an awesome material to work with, to make things with, because it does have all of these different manifestations of kind of life in it.
And is that what drew you initially to start working with it? Was it just like there's something there?
Yeah, I think so. I have to say, you know, just between us, you
okay.
and I.
Yep. And nobody else will hear
no
this,
No one
I
else
promise.
Will hear.
Yep.
But I started at summer camp. As a teenager, I went to art camp in Western Massachusetts, actually. And I don't know why I signed up for the glass blowing class. I think I saw it and it looked cool or interesting. And I was studying textiles and drawing. And the next year, I went back to that same camp, Horizons New England Craft Program, which is now a different name, Snow Farm. I signed up for the class. I hated every moment of it. It was hot. I got burnt by someone and incredibly difficult. I couldn't control the material at all. And then by the third week, I made this hideous bowl with these, you know, 80s purple stripes around it. And I fell in love with the fact that I could make this thing. I was able to control it and I just kept going. And then I went to college for it. So I was, of course, conscious at that time in my life and beginning to be self-aware, but it wasn't this deliberate decision, oh, I'm going to study glass because of the qualities of glass. It just was something, you know, that I was drawn to the process probably intuitively. And then when I went to school for fibers and glass. And I think by the time I had some semblance of control over the process, I was beginning to understand what I might want to do with it. But I think that changes over time. It can say that my ideas have kind of continued to evolve in the material, and it definitely feeds the ideas in my work just as much as my ideas feed into the material. So
we'll talk a little bit about that, because some of your works that I've both seen in person and looked at photos of, I mean, the glass is just layered upon layered and the sculptures are gorgeous. Some of the glass is clear, some of it's opaque, and it just looks huge. There's just so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine you alluded to that just a little bit ago about how glass can change from molten to brittle in seconds.
Right.
How are you working on pieces that large?
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. I would say I really use the techniques that I need to kind of build a vocabulary of objects. And then when I'm in my studio, I basically have all of these objects all over the place and I start to put things together. I get really compulsive, like I move what if this goes here? What if that goes there? What if this goes
here? So you're working with pieces amassed. That you've already created. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. And then you start trying mm-hmm. to figure out how they work together.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I glue, and then I do a lot of gluing. I use epoxy and silicone, and I really amass things in that way. So sometimes I fuse things together. I'll make things hot and I'll put them back in a kiln and kind of fuse them together, return them to their molten state, but still retain some, you know, essence of the shape. And then I'll glue and I'll build on that. But a lot of things are also just stacked kind of precariously. And literally, if it looks precarious, it may be precarious. So I will say, though, that the Benketcha, which is at the Renwick at the Smithsonian in D.C., did not get damaged in the last earthquake. So
oh, that's
I was
good.
So panicked. I emailed and I was like, how are you? But really, how is Benketcha? Because I thought, okay, this is it. It's over. And in fact,
it's in many pieces.
Yeah, they all flexed and moved. You know, they are essentially glued together. But
they're
unlike the Washington Monument.
Yeah,
it did. You know, have some damage that amazingly held together. So that was.
That's a relief.
Interesting.
It's a relief.
to find out. Yeah.
Well, you talked about, you know, being introduced to making glass, which of course is hot.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chemical process going on. It's also dangerous mm-hmm. because you're dealing with such high temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that it takes a while to get some sort of craftsmanship over the material.
That's true.
You can't just like blow glass. You know, you have to learn to manipulate the material.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get students mm-hmm. into it and not frustrated?
Mm-hmm. I try to give them just enough information that they stay safe and not try to overload them with all of the do's and don'ts in the process, because I found that if I give too much information, not only are they not really able to grasp it at that time because everything is so new and alien to them, but also I could be kind of shaping their experimentation in the process in a way that might be counterproductive. Like they might make something that is totally amazing that I never would have made, you know, in a totally different way. So I try to be very, very gentle with instruction, you know, as long as everyone stays safe, which is it's very clear how to teach that. And then I might demonstrate basic techniques. But other than that, I want to break through and try to let people discover on their own how to use this material. It's almost like hearkening back to the beginning of the craft art movement. Just like figure it out a little bit on your own, because now we have this whole system of working that really determines what the outcome of an object looks like. And I don't want to continue to steer people in that direction. I want there to be more exploration in the material.
Pushing the boundaries of the material.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And so I think that starts as a student.
Well, for you as a working glass artist, mm-hmm. how do you find the craft movement in the United States and worldwide? Because mm-hmm. there seems to be a resurgence of interest in mm-hmm. it, at least in Europe and here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're living in a really pretty spectacular time. I mean, it's not this new movement anymore. It started in the late 60s, early 70s in all different traditional craft processes, clay, fibers, wood, glass, metals. So, but now we're kind of past that, and we're now at a place where it's not so new anymore. I mean, if you want to discover these materials, you can do it very easily. You can go to a university, you can go to a continuing education program, a summer program, and kind of get into these materials immediately, which you really couldn't do prior. You might have to apprentice in a factory or apprentice with a master craftsperson. It was a much more closed kind of environment. Now, I think the immediacy of the materials allows people to express themselves and really utilize the materials for their inherent qualities, the history behind the material, whether it's decorative arts, industry, fine art, domestic arts. So I think that that's really terrific, because you'll find that so many people are using the materials and it's not so dogmatic anymore, like I am a glass artist or I work in wood or I'm a ceramicist. People don't really want to be defined in that way anymore. they're just working. They're contemporary artists working in these different materials for different reasons. I will say, though, that there's still kind of these different camps where there are people who have ideas and then they choose to work in a certain material because it's fitting with their idea. And then there's also people that really choose to work in a material because maybe their ideas fit that material. And I happen to be more in that camp. I find that the material, the longer I work in it, continues to give me information that propels what my ideas are. So I think that that is really a distinction that you'll find today.
More so than, say, art and craft and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just your way, you know, the way that people think about making. Then there's people who have ideas and it's not important for them to make the work at all, and they contract out the objects to be made. And I also do some of that. So I'm totally not against that. I really enjoy having other people's hands in my process because it broadens my vocabulary, and they're going to make things in a way that I can't make things. And that, I think, makes it much more exciting for me as well.
Interesting that sharing, because so many times I think people are very guarding of their ideas. They don't want other people's hands in there. They want it to be theirs, you know.
Or they want to be clearly like, this is my idea. You're helping me make this idea.
But you have mine.
It's my idea. So, I mean, that being said, the people that have participated in my work are not necessarily credited in the wall text that you might find at the museum or something like that. But I don't withhold that information. And most of those people don't actually want to be credited because it isn't their ideas. It is their hands, even though it comes into – so it gets very complicated. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Depending upon who you are and – what you need, that kind of thing.
To risk the pun, through a glass darkly.
Risk away.
Risk away. Well, Beth Lipman, it has been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Beth Lipman is an internationally renowned glass artist based in Sheboygan Falls. She spoke with Bonnie North. Lipman will be leading a glass and kiln weekend workshop this Saturday and Sunday at the John Michael Kohler Center in Sheboygan. There's more information as well as a link to photographs of Lipman's work at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That is Wednesday's Lake Effect. Tomorrow on the show, 575 Gorilla Haiku comes to Milwaukee. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from WUWM FM and HD1, Milwaukee Public Radio. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. Thank you.